Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
Well, Justin, it's been quite a few weeks here. Nice spring, you know. Nice to see the stock market doing better this week, too, by the way, as an aside. But, gosh, I mean, a lot going on in sports with golf, right? Masters behind us.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler just dominating.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I mean, to do the hat trick this past week with winning Heritage, wow. I mean, that was quite a feat. And now he's having this Tiger-esque type year,
isn't
he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's on a run right now. Pretty unbelievable to watch. And then on the women's side, Nelly Korda also just doing things that have never been done.
Yeah, even more than Scotty, quite frankly.
That's
five
right.
in a row, unbelievable stuff.
Right.
That's like hasn't been done. I don't know. They said only twice, I guess. I guess there was Nancy Lopez I saw on the Golf Channel and some other notable LPGA.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
pretty crazy stuff going on, and for it to be going on, you know, together simultaneously, is just incredible for the sport of golf and for women's golf especially. But yeah, just a really cool time.
And you said you actually grew up down near Nelly Korda.
Yeah. So I worked down near Bradenton, Florida. Worked at IMG Academy for several years after college. And Nelly and her family are from down there. Met them a couple of times. And yeah, so seen Nelly around the golf courses down there. And she was really good 5 or 6 years ago. And I think she was actually still maybe pursuing tennis. But yeah, just a really cool story for their family, and man, she's lights out right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, speaking of exciting, we have a couple exciting topics to talk about this week. We're gonna start off talking about the question of, do I need a trust? Gosh, we get this question all the time. You know, trusts are super complicated, and it's kind of this nebulous thing to most people. So we're gonna try to shed some light on that today. Really, you know, pull the veil back and talk about what are trusts good for and what are they not good for. I think there's like 7 illustrations or examples that we talk about, situations where you might or might not need a trust. So, and well over half of those, probably not great for a trust. So, yeah, we're going to really talk about it. I think that'll be a very interesting topic. And then we're going to follow that up with the 7 ways to fund your child's athletic pursuits?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's summertime's coming up. The kiddos are probably looking to or are already participating in something sports related. So if that pertains to you and your family, we're going to go through a couple of ways to help fund some of those summer sports activities.
Yeah, that's a great topic. By the way, I'm Steve Marbert. I'm a certified financial planner and a Dave Ramsey SmartVestor Pro with over 28 years experience in financial planning and investment advice.
Yeah, and I'm Justin Folsom. I'm also a financial advisor here at the firm, and next week will be my 1-year mark.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That's awesome. And a great year.
That's right.
We're excited to have you listen to us today on our weekly show. Our podcast up every Friday morning. You can find us on our website, moneymd.net, or you can pick us up on iTunes, listen to us anywhere in the world. Do check us out on our website, moneymd.net, where you can link to us there. You can send us your questions. You can link to all our previous shows. We have them listed by topics, so you can, you know, look through those. And, I mean, we've covered everything you can imagine over the past 11, 12 years that we've been doing this. So lots of topics and lots of good data, good topics and information out there. So do check that out. But we're going to start off here, Justin, with the financial fact of the week.
Yeah, that's right. And this actually came from a study with some of my cohorts during the CFP. Thought this was really interesting. It's talking about long-term care insurance. So the data shows us that the average stay in a nursing home or a long-term care facility, something equivalent, is around 2.5 years. And that's what we see with our clients as well. And so individuals that may have a long-term care policy with 3 years of protection, the numbers would tell us that only about 8% of those individuals actually exhaust their benefits. So they only use the full 3 years about 8% of the time. So if you look at the same thing with a 5-year policy, less than 2% of those individuals actually use up the full coverage of that policy. So just something to think about if you're looking at long-term care insurance, making sure that it's right for you. Not everyone necessarily needs it. So make sure you're talking to an advisor about your options and looking to maybe run a needs analysis to see if long-term care insurance is something that you need.
Yeah, it's a super important topic. And, you know, everybody is, when they get older, are concerned about it. But yeah, it's complicated though. I mean, yeah, you can cover it out of your assets if you have enough assets, of course. You know, Medicaid will pick it up if you spend down your assets. So there's those ways of covering long-term care, but it certainly can be a big deal. I mean, my mom's been in a assisted living / nursing home for 4 years now. And she has basically used up a 3-year policy that gets stretched out to 4 years of benefits. So it can happen. She's kind of the exception to the rule. So you have to kind of look at it with your eyes open and evaluate the cost versus benefits and the chances of really needing it.
So, yeah, that's right. And one note to that, not all of, you know, saying that a policy wasn't exhausted, not everything is bad about that. Some people get better. Some people don't need the assisted living. Some people are able to leave the nursing home. So, but just a good data point, again, to understand with clients.
Absolutely. So good fact of the week. All right. And that leads up to our first topic here, and that is, do I need a trust? Yeah, Justin, I mean, this is a great question. We get this all of the time. And it's certainly a very confusing topic for the average person. As I mentioned, it's a kind of a nebulous topic. I mean, we see a lot of people who have trust who didn't really need one or don't understand what it's for. And then we see a lot of situations where folks, you know, should have a trust. So it just depends on your situation. But before we dig too far into that, maybe I should just define what a trust is. For the average person, I mean, a trust is a entity that is created, and it has a document that controls that entity called a trust document, and it's agreement basically between three parties. You know, one party is the grantor, is the person that actually puts assets in the trust. The other party is the trustee. That's the person that is in charge of the trust that controls the trust, and it might be the grantor during their lifetime. And then the third party is the beneficiaries. And it could be the grantor or their children or somebody totally different. So there's those three parties that are involved, and it could be the same person, you know, during their lifetime. But it's a separate entity that's set up to take care of assets. That's what a trust is in general. And so we're going to try to dig through this topic today and just give you some very basic situations where a trust makes sense and where it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And it certainly can make sense, but it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Of course, we, you know, all want to do some of the things that are we mentally associate with a trust, like saving taxes is a common one. We want to make sure assets go where we want them to go after we're gone with the least amount of effort and cost. And that's where many people think the trust is the answer. And it can help in certain instances, but it's not usually the right answer for saving taxes or distributing your assets after death. Also, people are afraid of paying estate taxes when they're gone because most people have heard how egregious, you know, those can be. And I mean, who wants the government to take a large chunk of your hard-earned income and your wealth whenever you die? But then there's also the people who have heard that the government can take it all when you go into a nursing home or need some type of long-term care. And, you know, they've heard that a trust can help avoid that. And these are all certainly valid concerns. So we're going to try to shed some light on where a trust can make a difference and where it can't help in some of these circumstances.
Yeah, and that's right, Steve. And just to be clear for the listeners, want to just talk about the tax portion for a second here. A trust does not help with income taxes in the vast majority of circumstances. That's not really the purpose of a trust. So don't think that you need a trust to help save taxes unless you're super wealthy, for instance, or maybe you have a complex situation with you and your family or assets. The only place where we've seen a trust save taxes recently is where someone is selling a business or they have other highly appreciated assets, and we can get into that a little bit, that they may want to sell or create income from. And maybe they want to give some of that to charity. So those are some of the instances that we'll talk about.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Vast majority of situations doesn't help with income taxes. That's exactly right. And beyond that, I mean, the estate tax exemption is another kind of confusing topic that people associate with a trust. You know, the truth is, though, the estate tax exemption is $13.6 million per individual, $27.2 million per couple.
Wow.
So that covers it for most people, right? No doubt. That's a huge number. So most of us don't really have to worry about estate taxes in any form or fashion. Even if Congress allows the current estate tax law to sunset in 2026, which it's scheduled to do, then the exemption drops to half. But that's still $13.6 million per couple. And so that covers it very well for most people. So under current law, there is no real need for a trust for estate taxes for most people. There's also the portability of estate tax exemption at death, where the surviving spouse can claim any unused exemption for their deceased spouse. So they will. So a couple will get at least $13.6 million under current law as an exemption if they use both exemptions for both spouses. So even after 2026. So there's no need for a trust to accomplish that. That's baked into law already. Secondly, I mean, you don't need a trust to distribute assets to your children or your heirs immediately after you pass away. Okay, if your plan is to give your assets to your kids immediately, you know, sure, a trust can do that, but so does a beneficiary designation that you would have on IRAs or life insurance policies or an investment account with a TOD designation, a beneficiary designation. In fact, listing beneficiaries is a better way to leave assets immediately to your children or heirs since it's simple. You know, it's fast, it's easy to execute by your executor after you pass away. You can make changes to it very easily. You know, a trust always makes this process much more complicated, usually more time consuming. So sometimes it's necessary to get an attorney involved just to interpret the trust and to help execute distributing assets if a trust holds or receives the assets first. So not a great reason for having a trust just to distribute your assets to your kids.
Yeah, that's right. And the third item here is having a trust isn't necessarily a great idea if you're just trying to avoid probate. So for most of our listeners here in South Carolina and Georgia, probate is a pretty simple and low-cost process, which doesn't involve or have to involve an attorney. So furthermore, for any accounts that you have a beneficiary listed, it already avoids probate and will pass straight to your kids or your heirs. So for all of your retirement accounts, life insurance policies, investment accounts with TOD beneficiary designations, like you were saying, Steve, it's going to pass directly to your heirs and avoid probate already. So only your house, checking accounts, other personal possessions, those are the things that are going to go through probate. So that shouldn't be a big concern for most people. So don't think that you have to run out and create a trust just to avoid probate.
Yeah, that's a great point, Justin. And then fourth, I mean, many people who create trust are doing so because they're concerned about having to spend down their assets for long-term care expenses, like we talked about for long-term care insurance. If they have to go into a nursing home before they die, then obviously that's a huge concern, and that could happen. This is certainly a big concern that a lot of people have, and it is very difficult for a trust to work successfully to avoid this issue. You know, for that reason, some people create a Medicaid trust to hold their assets out of their control or possession, to sort of impoverish themselves in order to qualify for Medicaid in the event of needing long-term care. A trust designated to get assets out of your possession has to be in place, though, for 60 months before you qualify for Medicaid to avoid being counted against you. And any retirement assets also have to be spent down prior to qualifying for Medicaid. Your income also has to be very low to qualify for Medicaid.
Yeah, so even if you've successfully done all of these things to accomplish, you know, having the need or not having the need for long-term care, you're likely going to be in the Medicare wing of the nursing home in a shared room with lesser care than you would receive should you go the private route and pay for that yourself. So we've rarely seen this all come together and work well in our experience with clients. We would suggest that you simply buy a long-term care policy instead to cover the risk of needing care and not being able to pay for it. And avoid creating a trust to attempt to qualify for Medicaid. So it rarely works. It really is not a great reason in creating a trust.
Yeah, in our opinion, yeah, that's just not a super reason, because it just doesn't usually all come together and work. I haven't seen it in my 29 years if anybody really use a lot of Medicaid after giving their assets away to a trust and getting it out of their possession.
Sure.
So, you know, if a trust is not the best for saving taxes, distributing your assets immediately after death, avoiding probate, or avoiding long-term care expenses, then when does it make sense? You know, that's kind of the key question. And there are certainly some great reasons to create a trust. Don't get me wrong. One of the primary purposes of a trust is to control how your assets are distributed and managed over time after you're gone. So if you don't want to leave your assets directly to your kids, you want it to be distributed over time, you know, over years, then a trust makes sense for that. You know, for instance, you know, if one of your kids is a spendthrift and you really wanted to keep them from wasting their inheritance, you could have a trust where a trustee would dole out 5% per year, you know, when you're gone, and never let them spend the principal. My mom actually has one of these that her mother and father created for her, since she wasn't very good with money. And that was a great idea, because it probably would have all been gone if they had left it straight to her.
Yeah, that's interesting. Another great reason for a trust would be if you have a special needs child that you wanted to ensure was taken care of after you're gone. Then you could create a special needs trust to then manage the money for them to pay for their care, you know, long after you're gone. Another good reason.
That's another good one. Yeah, another one is, I mean, if you want to gift or leave large amounts of money to a charity, you know, while still benefiting from some income, then you could create a charitable remainder trust or a charitable unit trust, they call it, a couple different types. That's a great reason for a trust. I mean, this can get complicated, but in this instance, I mean, you could get a large tax deduction for the gift. You could sell appreciated assets in the charitable trust tax-free, and you could reinvest it. You could draw income out of it for life, or give the income to a charity each year, or leave the remainder to a charity. That's a great reason for a trust. It's complicated, and you know, it's expensive to set up, but once you get it, I mean, it certainly accomplishes that, and another great reason for a trust. So all of this is to say, you know, most people in today's world really don't need a trust as part of their estate plan, unless you have one of these more unusual circumstances that we just mentioned. You know, it simply depends, though, on what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, we hope that's answered some of the basic questions about, you know, do you need a trust in your estate plan? But send us any follow-up questions you would have. We'd love to help you understand that better or answer those questions. All right. And that leads us up here to the question of the week.
Yeah, this is a good one, Steve. So we're asked, should I add my child as a joint account owner on my bank accounts in case, rather, something happens to me?
Okay, and that's a great question, and it falls right into that estate planning topic. Yeah, we see that a lot, and you know that can work well. You know, particularly if it's not a large bank account, you're just like talking about the checking account. You want as the son or daughter, want to help your mom or your dad take care of their finances when they're elderly and they need somebody looking over their shoulder or helping them pay the bills. My mom does that for her mom, and you know, it works great, you know, and not large, but it's just a checking account. And so, but what it means though, when she dies, that checking account will become hers.
That's
it will
right.
become the child. So it's going to bypass the siblings. So you just need to take that into consideration. You know, I would never recommend that you put your name or a child's name on like the investment accounts, because again, it develops right of survivorship, meaning that they take over the account when they're gone, and it bypasses all the siblings, bypasses the will, you know, and you know, it bypasses the beneficiaries.
Right.
But it works well for a checking account. Another way to do that would be to have a power of attorney. If you just have a power of attorney on file with the bank, then they recognize you to have that power. And then it doesn't mess up the estate plan of where the assets go. So I would recommend at minimum having a power of attorney in that situation so that you could take care of the investment accounts and the IRAs and make sure RMDs are taken and signed for them and all that kind of stuff. But in addition, you could put your name on a checking account. I think that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Just as long as you recognize what that does, it means that checking account is going to become that child's when you're gone. But that's a great question. And yeah, it's one of those important topics about estate planning. So good question of the week. And that leads us up here to our next topic. And that is 7 ways to fund your child's athletic pursuits.
Yeah, that's right. And this comes from Jean Folger. She works in personal finance. She does consulting and things like that. She's written several really good articles. But yeah, we're talking about, I don't know about you, Steve, growing up, I was always sport to sport, whatever
yep,
was in
I was
season.
Too. Absolutely.
Yeah. So many kids today are the same way, and, looking for one that fits their likes and abilities can be challenging. You guys know the drill: soccer one season, baseball the next, between registration, and sporting equipment, all this, you know, dabbling in all of these various sports can get expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
Yeah,
for sure.
So the cost definitely adds up once your kid decides to pursue a particular sport, you know, maybe at a higher level. I'm thinking golf, and golf clubs are not cheap.
No.
So you can expect to potentially add higher coaching fees, travel costs for competitions and tournaments. We're talking about gas and hotels and food, event entry fees, membership fees, all of these things culminating together to make, you know, this pursuit expensive for the parent. So, right, it can be costly to keep your kids physically and mentally active. We do believe in that, and we think that's a good way to raise your children, but it doesn't have to be expensive in that way. So we're going to talk about several ways to help support your kid as they go through these sporting endeavors. And I'll get us kicked off here with the first one, Steve.
Okay.
It's about individual sponsors. So soliciting your friends and relatives for financial help can be a little bit uncomfortable. Yet most people you ask are willing to donate a few dollars here or there to go towards that kid's specific goal. So site-specific reasons why your kid needs X amount of dollars. You know, Steve, I wouldn't recommend just asking, hey, can I have $100? We're going to, you know, an event or whatever. Sit down with these people and explain, you know, how this would help. Here's an example that Jean lists here. River needs $100 to attend a 2-day camp that will really help develop his goalie skills. So being specific, depending on your child's age, they can be the ones that maybe approach your friends or relatives or family members. the ongoing support from those sponsors is ideal because it's money you can count on from them. It's typically cash or a check, and many recreation centers actually and schools around the country actually offer financial aid or scholarship programs to ensure that kids are able to access gear and uniforms and things like that outside of school hours. So looking for those individual sponsors could really take some of the costly burden off of the parents.
Yeah, I'd suggest hitting up the grandparents first. Mm. I think that's an obvious one.
Right.
You don't even have to ask. Just kind of throw it out there and say, wow, this is really a struggle. Don't know how we're going to be able to afford this. And chances are you do that in the hearing of the grandparents, so they're going to jump right in there and help out. So
yeah, that's right.
That's a good one. All right. The next one, though, is local business sponsors. Okay. This gets a little more tricky. I mean, you know, the chances are slim that your kid's going to get signed on with Nike, right? Especially when they're 8 years old.
That's right.
But, you know, you can secure some financial assistance from local businesses. I mean, again, you know, best approach is to go to the business with a particular goal in mind and, or at least make the need. Lay out what the need is, you know, financially. But make sure you provide potential sponsors with kind of the average yearly cost associated with participating in the sport and the sport's positive, individual and community aspects, you know, what it's doing for the kids and the community, you know, cite possible advertising opportunities and, you know, offer to write them a thank you editorial in the local newspaper, you know, or put their name in the, you know, brochure or any publications that you have. But think of creative ways to incentivize the business. I mean, most businesses like to help out kids. They want to help out kids to be fit and active. And it's great public relations. So any way you can tie it into PR and public relations would be a great way to bring in a local business.
Yep.
The next one is product donations. You know, rather than donating hard cold cash, some businesses might consider giving products such as equipment or, you know, unrelated goods that can be raffled off to raise money. I mean, we see that in charity events all the time.
That's right.
Just ensure that the donor, you know, approves of using it for a raffle. Chances are they certainly will because it's a great, you know, publicity item. But yeah, if they give something big like that, you can raffle it off, and that's a great way to do it. I've seen that done a lot of charity events.
Yep.
And, you know, this can be a good opportunity for a team fundraiser as well. So in addition, you can, you know, speak to your child's sports league about maybe an equipment swap where the families can trade or donate, you know, their older used equipment that's gently used gear. So lots of ways to get product donations. That's a big help for a sports team.
Yeah, definitely hitting up those local businesses for sponsorships. And things of that nature always help. Fourth item here is work a deal with the organizer. So some sports such as gymnastics or tennis require expensive monthly tuition for your kid to participate. If you have a special skill that an organizer can benefit from or don't mind volunteering at the front desk, you may be able to strike a deal for some reduced registration cost. Depending on your skills, you could offer to design a website for them, repair a piece of equipment, sew some costumes. Think of ways that you can save the organizer of that sport some money and offer it in exchange for some of the upfront cost and payment. So fifth item here, Steve, as we move along, trying to, and I mentioned this in the last one, is making a website. So not necessarily for the business, this will be for the individual. Many young athletes have websites to let the world know about their dreams. Be sure the website includes detailed directions for donating. We're talking about the PayPals, the Venmos, the Cash Apps here.
Yep.
So donors enjoy seeing what the athletes are up to. So be sure to update competition results and other achievements that may happen throughout the year. Let everyone know about the website and ask them to share it with people who may be interested, right? Sharing it on social media. So many of the kids are tech savvy these days, much more tech savvy than myself, even being a late 20-year-old. So enough to create and maintain their own websites, monitor them for safety reasons, obviously, and ensure that they remain professional and relevant. When you're making websites and things like GoFundMes and things, it is important to monitor that for the kids, because it is dealing with people's money, and you want to make sure that you're respectful and professional about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. Fundraising is another one, Justin. I mean, people are reluctant to fork out cash just for a warm, fuzzy feeling that they get in supporting, you know, your kid, but they might be willing to donate if they get something tangible in exchange. That's where fundraising comes in. I mean, you or your child can, you know, make something to sell, you know, anything from cookies and cakes, include an ingredient list, you know, if people have allergies, as well, if you make that, of course, you know, but they can do necklaces, even plants. You can start seeds at home and then sell them when they're ready to plant in the garden, like maybe tomato plants for the spring, right? But ask your local businesses if you can set up shop in front of their store. And if so, you know, advertise in local paper, you know, including a place, date, time, sales item, sales benefit, what the benefits, that kind of thing. So that's fundraising. And then another one is you can put kids to work. You know, that's always a good one, right? Yeah. I mean, get them doing something productive, right? If your child is pursuing an upper level sport, the reality is they cannot have much time left over probably to devote to making money. That being said, I mean, your child could still, you know, help out by earning an allowance. You know, even though it's your money, it teaches them, you know, how to work toward a goal. But like attending a sports themed summer camp, you can get some chores done in exchange for that, right? By, you know, doing some odd jobs as his or her schedule permits. Older kids can mow lawns or babysit younger kids. But younger kids could offer to feed the neighbor's cat, you know, or, you know, pull some weeds in the garden. I mean, you know, there's endless things you can do around the house. So definitely put them to work to make them feel like they have some skin in the game and, you know, they're earning the money. So,
yeah, yeah, that's right. And the bottom line, Steve, of these seven, you know, we see that sports are pricey, especially once your kid gets to that competitive level. So all the travel expenses, equipment, coaching, memberships, doctor visits that we really didn't touch on. And we hope that you don't have to deal with any of those. But if so, the fees and things, they really add up on the parent or guardian. And they have to come up with that money somehow, right, for the kids to participate. So rather than mortgaging your house, you can hunt and gather bits of money from several of the different avenues that we talked about today. So,
yeah, that's good. Good topic. All right. And that leads us up here to our final thing, and that is the prescription of the week.
Yeah. So, Steve, this comes about, we're talking about reviewing your tax withholding. So we just passed, you know, April 15th, the golden date there. And so unless you've asked for an extension, you've probably already done your taxes for the year. If you received a big tax return, it may feel like a bonus now. But if your income has stayed the same, then you may be paying more to Uncle Sam throughout the year than you may need to. So review those W-4s and pay stubs to make sure your withholdings are allowing you to get the most out of your paychecks this year without owing money next tax year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even pensions and Social Security, you can adjust the withholding on it, and you should, you know, try to come out more even, not owe a big chunk, and certainly not get some huge refund.
Right.
The time to adjust that. Good prescription of the week. And that brings us to a close for this week's edition of Money MD. Tune in next week to hear more prescriptions for your financial health. Check us out on our website, moneymd.net. You can send us your questions, link to us there, or you can give us a call at Richard Young Associates at 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of your week.
Only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.